Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
Monoculture plantations destroying forests and communities across East Asia. Shamila Raffin from SAM, Friends of the Earth Malaysia, speaks to Real World Radio about the destructive nature of agro-commodities in Malaysia and Southeast Asia and the people fighting for change. Agro-commodities have been ravaging forests across Malaysia and East Asia for decades. Since the 1990s, monoculture plantations have replaced logging, yet they are no less destructive on the environment or communities. You can see the movement of the transnational logging industry first in the Philippines, then after the forest is gone, in Thailand, and then Malaysia, Indonesia, and Papua New Guinea. You can really see the path of destruction of the transnational logging industry and transnational monoculture plantations, explains Shamila, senior researcher and media officer at SAM, Friends of the Earth Malaysia. In Malaysia, this ongoing destruction is caused primarily by plantations for the oil palm and pulp and paper industries. The result is forest loss and the violation of indigenous customary rights and their territories. Let's now listen to the interview.
So we have Shamila with us today. She's a senior researcher and a media officer at SAM, Friends of the Earth Malaysia. Shamila, welcome to Real World Radio. Shamila, we would like to talk a bit about agro-commodities in Malaysia. And of course, if you also want to share some info with us about the region, that would be fine. But starting with your country particularly, the first thing that we would like to ask you is, what are the characteristics of the oil palm or other agro-commodities in Malaysia?
Well, if we are going to talk about oil palm and pulp and paper industry, particularly after the 1990s, one of the main characteristics is that it's a post-logging development, meaning that there is development in forested areas. It involves forest conversion, especially in the Malaysian Borneo states of Sabah and Sarawak. So that is one thing that we need to take into account. This is a result, a continuation of unsustainable logging that took place somewhere between, say, 1960s to around 1980s. There was unsustainable timber harvesting rates. And then by the 1990s, the development of monoculture plantations were pushed in such log-over forests. So two of the most key crops being cultivated are pulp and paper, or and timber trees, and also oil palm. And in particular, in Sarawak and Sabah especially, but also in Peninsula Malaysia, in certain places, these operations, they also encroach on indigenous customary territories. So there are two features here that we can see. One, it involves forest conversion. Second, it may also violate indigenous customary territories.
So what would you say, according to those two titles that you mentioned, how would you summarize the main impacts of this model in your country?
Well, the first impact, obviously, is the conversion of forest. So you actually lose entire forest, while logging, as bad as it was, also destroyed forests, that there will still be forest standing. But when you talk about total forest conversion, we're talking about, you know, total destruction of the entire ecosystem, and it's irreversible. Second, they also have impacts on indigenous communities whose territories are affected by these plantations. So then you would have like entire parts of the territories literally gone or lost to monoculture plantations. In relation to your first question just now, also the other characteristics, also the fact that they such monoculture plantations, they tend to be developed by corporations. So we, in terms of the two models, you can see how the first, they're not run by communities. And then the second, so therefore the consequence of that would be that some communities would be affected by the development. Another important thing that we must also remember is that there are two models of agriculture. You cannot say that when you, let's say, oppose large-scale oil palm plantations in Sarawak, Borneo, which may destroy forests and the livelihoods of indigenous communities, the same as hurting the income of oil palm smallholders in the country. We support smallholders. So we must distinguish these two models, large-scale monoculture plantations and smallholding farms. They are very different modes of agriculture, and we need to distinguish them. And these two types of, let's say, oil palm cultivation are not the same in nature, structure, and scale. They represent different economic interests. They seek vastly different gradations of profitability, and they are situated on different planes of the existing national and global political and economic hierarchy. So obviously, communities that are impacted by monoculture plantations, they themselves, when they lose their land, they themselves cannot become smallholders, because if they would like to partake in cultivation, like, parts of their land would actually be lost. So where are they going to cultivate now, not just for their livelihood, for their everyday food, but also income? Because a lot of indigenous communities also derive income, not only on agriculture cultivation, but also from the rivers, for example. And rivers can be heavily polluted because of monoculture plantations. So yes, number one, we lose the forest. And second, communities suffer because of monoculture plantations.
Then, Jamila, we jump into the third question, which is, how have you worked on this issue of the rights of local communities living in rural areas? What are the impacts on women's rights specifically?
For the first part of the question, we in Sarawak, we work in a region called Baram, where our office is located in, and we work with them to help them protect their territories from encroachment. That's one part of the work. And second, we also work with them when beyond the encroachment of the territories is that the impacts, the ecological impacts of the plantations. For example, you may have river pollution, severe river pollution, or you may have flooding, for example, more intense flooding. Like the region where we work in, it has seen more intense flooding in the last 10 years. So we try to highlight the impacts, the environmental impacts to the authorities too. And on women's rights specifically, I'll give you an example. Monoculture plantations can really disturb the ecosystem of, for example, the river. Beyond the destruction of forests, that happens. I mean, that's one. But let's say when a river is polluted, women use, just like men, in traditional communities, they have very high mobility because of the river. So, you know, they might go out on their own, or, you know, going out fishing for the day, or they would have their own group of women doing that. Now, when the ecosystem is affected, for example, crocodiles. I'll give you one example. Crocodile sighting may become more frequent, yeah, because maybe they don't have enough food or something. So then women's mobility would be greatly affected, because now they would have to depend on the men. They can't go out on their own or with a group of women that, like they used to, because they're very afraid of the crocodiles. If, you know, imagine that just being alone there fishing and suddenly they appear. So that's one. And that has impact on their ability to bring food and money home. Fishing is a very lucrative activity for women. They can have their own income. They can sell the fish. And also, they are able to travel alone. If their husbands or partners are not free on that day, or they have other arrangements, they are able to farm alone and travel through the river. But when the river is polluted, maybe the crocodiles, like I said, there is increased siltation, or there is even proliferation of aquatic weeds that make transportation, river transportation, very, very difficult. So this is like only one aspect on how women can be specifically affected by the development of monoculture plantations. I know that sometimes there are also reports of them feeling unsafe, because when plantation development comes, there will be male outsiders, and sometimes they would feel a little bit uncomfortable just going out on their own to the forest or to their farms, or, you know. So I know that sometimes, like, some women actually do feel that, because, as you know, indigenous communities, they live in close-knit community, and, you know, even the neighboring communities, they would know them, they would be familiar faces. But when they are faces that they're not familiar at all, outsiders, that can make them feel very uncomfortable to go around their area freely.
So thank you, Jamila. I would like to ask you, what alternatives exist in Malaysia promoted by the peoples to this model that you are describing?
For SAM, we are working with our community partners to promote and implement agroecology, sustainable agriculture, basically, and also community forest management. We run programs, activities, workshops to promote agroecology practices. We help communities exchange information and experiences in conducting sustainable agriculture, and we also write about them. So these are some of the alternatives that exist that we are trying to promote. We are also looking into working more specifically at the policy level to have more sustainable forms of agriculture being carried out in the country. And also the integration of community rights, especially indigenous community rights, in forestry management. Because currently, for example, we do not have like a very strong proper policy to allow communities to meaningfully participate in forestry management. So, you know, you have the typical frontier conversation fortress conservation practices as with other countries around the world. So we are also trying to promote this, that community rights become integral to forestry management.
And what can you tell us about agroecological practices and community-based farming management or community forest management, particularly that you already mentioned in Malaysia?
There is the concept of territoriality is very important for indigenous communities. So if you want community rights to be central and integral to forestry management, you must recognize their territories. So community forestry management, our community partners all would like to have their territories recognized intact as they are. Second is that women are quite play a central role, let's say, in the agroecology projects and also even in community forest management. Then we are also trying to strengthen partnerships between communities. At the end of this month, we usually work, as I said, in a district called Baram. We are going to visit another district in Lawas, which is another district in Sarawak, to have more exchanges on agroecology practices. So there is this networking, sharing of knowledge, sharing of seeds, and a real like exchange, meaningful exchange between communities who are very active in these practices.
Those are practices which are widespread in the country.
For indigenous communities, of course, originally they are the proponent of forestry management and agriculture that are sustainable. So we only try to help them to strengthen this, to defend their territories so that their practices can continue. So you've got indigenous communities. That has always happened. But yes, in recent years, there are also many urban communities beginning to engage in sustainable agriculture, in organic farming, also in urban farming, in fact. So we also have those urban communities promoting, practicing, in fact, in particular, sustainable agriculture in towns and cities. And nearby Kuala Lumpur, we are not involved in that. There are also communities who have gathered like into a group, a loose group, trying to protect forests around the capital city. They may consist of, let's say, nature lovers, people who go on trekking and hiking. So we've got that movement, yes, in urban areas too.
Perfect, Shamila. This is exactly what I wanted to know. Moving on to the last questions, I would like to know if there are any public policy proposals that address the issue of rights. And if so, what are they focused on?
Well, currently, in terms of public policy, the issue of community rights is not very well integrated into forestry management. So there is recently a policy on social forestry. But when we talk about, let's say, indigenous communities, there are laws that recognize these rights, but the laws are very weak and often flawed. Although we do have judicial decisions to support the rights as a right to property. So we still, SAM is working on developing proposals to strengthen these rights in forestry management or to have an integration of protection of forestry forest and the protection of community rights. They should go together. But currently, we do not have strong laws to protect community rights or to put community rights at the center of forestry management or forest protection.
Is there anything else that I probably didn't ask you and you would like to say?
I think if we see the larger context of Southeast Asia, countries like Indonesia and also Papua New Guinea, you can really see that the recent development, let's say after 1990s, 2000s of monoculture plantations, the new ones, they are really a post-logging development. And you can also see that the logging industry, the movement of the transnational logging industry, first in the Philippines, especially South Philippines, and then after the forest is gone in Thailand, then Malaysia, then you will have that also Indonesia, and then Papua New Guinea. And then after that, as far as Malaysia, Indonesia and Papua New Guinea are concerned, monoculture would start to come. For example, in Indonesia, especially, as you know, we've got the problem of the transboundary haze, where the haze from Sumatra and Kalimantan Islands envelops Southeast Asia for weeks. And this is a 20-year-old problem, first started in the late 1990s. So you can see really the path of destruction of the transnational logging industry, the transnational monoculture plantations, they are very much related as far as at least Southeast Asia is concerned, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Papua New Guinea. Yeah.
We did have Shamila. She's a senior researcher and media officer at SAM, Friends of the Earth Malaysia. So Shamila, thank you very much.
Welcome, Jose.
Real World Radio, broadcasting free words, building popular communications by FOI.